You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, Keith Alexander making the workload for yours truly light in the first hour. Keith likes it every so often when we take the bit out of his mouth and let him run wild in the pasture.
Run amok in the studio.
Yeah, sometimes Keith is either too loud or too soft. So let's see if we can get that board mix
it's
right.
It's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
He's
trying to make
just
me just right.
Okay, I think we got it there. Anyway, Keith offering some extended commentary on some items that piqued his interest during the first hour. We're thankful for that. We don't always let Keith, or there's normally not enough time for any of us to have such an extended amount of commentary. But when Keith does it, it makes for a really special show. We should do it more often, and I hope you're enjoying it tonight as much as I am. And this hour, we got a couple of more segments with Keith, and he's going to unpack a couple of more items before we get to the back end of the show with Sean Bergen talking about the Black Lives Matter
St. Louis man
criminality in St. Louis. Then Jim Lancia in the third hour talking also about that, but in addition to Antifa and what they've been up to. And then the closer tonight, our guest for the evening, not counting the two correspondents, Sam Dixon, talking about Antifa also. So Bergen, Lancia, and Dixon in that order, the last half of the show. But first, more to Keith. Keith, you want to touch a little bit on affirmative action. That's, of course, not a topic unfamiliar to listeners of the political cesspool, but why do we want to talk about it tonight?
Well, affirmative action, I think, is overlooked now in today's world as a real cause of white dispossession in the United States of America. It's basically been around since 1935, but it really gained traction under the Nixon administration, so much for the Republicans protecting the interests of white people. But in 1969, the EEOC was allowed to interpret the 1964 Civil Rights Act as requiring affirmative action for college admissions, professional school admissions, and with the Griggs decision in the U.S. Supreme Court, affirmative action in employment. You could basically have different standards for different races of people. And this supposedly has worked well in the eyes of our elite, but it has not worked to increase substantially the educational attainment of native-born black Americans. What it has helped is foreign-born blacks who come to America who haven't been affected by this pernicious ghetto culture that we have in America, and they have been the ones that have been claiming these slots in selective colleges and universities through affirmative action. So if it was to help people suffering from the legacy of slavery, as the left likes to preach to us and moralize, it has been an abject failure. But if you are like us here at the Political Cesspool and realize that everything on the liberal agenda, which is supposedly beneficence towards minorities, is actually malevolence towards white people, and particularly white males, then affirmative action has worked like a charm, because it has really undercut and subverted the social upward mobility of white working class and lower middle class children and people trying to move up the social ladder. Now, it's a well-known characteristic of elites to pour beneficence on people at the bottom of the heap, at the bottom of the totem pole, but to look with thinly veiled contempt on fellow whites, one rung down the social ladder from themselves. That's exactly what's happened with affirmative action in America. People that in previous generations would have been allowed to move up the social ladder are now being denied that opportunity. People who merit that upward mobility because of their intelligence, because of their grades, because of their capabilities and abilities. These people are shunted back to the back of the bus. I'm the perfect age for this. If you were born so that you were getting out of high school in 1969, then you were really in the first group of people that had their college admissions negatively impacted by affirmative action. Now, if you were just going to the regular state university, it didn't really affect you. But if you were going to go to a, or were trying to get into a second tier or first tier private school like Harvard, Yale, or a second tier like Vanderbilt or Northwestern or something like this, this would have had a very negative effect on your ability to get into those places. And then you would likewise suffer when you got through with college if you wanted to go on to professional school or graduate school. And then when you got through with that, you would be negatively affected by the employment affirmative action that allowed these people to hire other people with lesser qualifications because they weren't white. So this was what we have, a nominally white regime at all this time running things, but they're running it against the interests of other whites. Why? Because whites alone, white Gentiles alone, out of all the groups in the world, lack a sense of racial solidarity. And our mission here at the Political Cesspool is to give white Gentiles permission to have a sense of racial solidarity and to act upon it and to make sure that we elect leaders that will look after our interests. We're still the majority in this country, and we need to wake up and act like it. And if we did that, then we might be able to save this ship from sinking, the ship of the nation.
Well, of course, if any white does stand up and seek to put his family first, seek to put his interests first, as any other
or
person, which most naturally would do, they're, of course, shouted down as a white supremacist or a Nazi or whatever.
A Klansman.
Certainly by members of other races, but most incredulously by people of their own race. And so this is a question that comes in from one of our listeners in New York, Keith. When's the last time a black leader ever condemned or distanced himself from a black nationalist?
Well, if he did, his career would be extremely short-lived. They do not. They will not tolerate an Uncle Tom. They will not tolerate a race traitor. If you say, if they get the least indication that you are favoring other groups over them, you will be history faster than it takes to shake a lamb's tail. On the other hand, we keep electing the same cucks over and over again, like Bill Haslam, the governor of Tennessee, who was elected by Southern white Gentiles, and the people in Black Lives Matter wouldn't vote for him on a bet. But he favors their interests in taking down Confederate monuments and disses the people that voted for him by supporting the removal of those statues.
All right. Well, we got to take a break. The people still think right, but they've got no power. So what good does that do us?
Well, they've got the power of going to the ballot box and voting out Bill Haslam, for example.
Well, how often does that happen where you unseat an incumbent? Well, we got to take a break. We'll be right back.
The first time I ever truly took a drink was the summer before my freshman year of high school.
When I was 12, I went to a party, and everybody was drinking, and so I just grabbed me a beer and started drinking.
The first time I drank, you know, it was fun. Find a game, see if we can do it without getting caught. But I didn't know that I was going to wind up more.
I wasn't drinking beer. It took too long to get drunk, and I didn't like the taste very well.
You know, it got to the point where I was drinking so much, I was getting bored with the feeling. I was getting bored with the buzz.
That's all that goes through your head is, when am I going to get wasted again?
You know, I started in slowly, you know, with pot. Then you just slowly move up the scale. And it's the typical story of a drug user.
Beer's the easiest thing for teenagers to get, and so they take one beer, which is like your first step.
Don't even do it. It's not worth it. Take it from somebody who knows.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, everybody, let me tell you what I did this morning. At about 10:30 this morning, I did something that I do every quarter, if not more often, and that is that I donated to the Political Cesspool's fundraising drive. I never ask you to do something that I'm not going to do for myself, so I went on there. I went online at thepoliticalcesspool.org, made a credit card contribution to the efforts of our work. And as we like to do from time to time, I'm going to just read a few cities from which we've received support. I am certainly not the only one who's contributed recently, but I do want to set an example. And other fans and listeners in other states have been doing that as well. So just within the last few days, here's a quick rundown. I just pulled these out of the top of the stack. Here's what we got. Glendale, Arizona, thank you for your support. Sherwood, Arkansas. Montvale, New Jersey. Beecher, Illinois. Ocala, Florida. Ephrata, Washington. Augusta, Georgia. Valley, Alabama. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Louisville, Kentucky. Sao Paulo, Brazil. There's actually two brothers down there in Sao Paulo who donate just about every month, and we love you dearly. Our Brazilian
connection.
Yes, absolutely. Summerfield, Florida. Sarasota, Florida. See, they were donating in Florida in the throes of Irma. Yeah, that's how dedicated they are. Ryson, Arkansas. Yeah, they're probably legally in Brazil. We had two contributions from Silver Spring, Maryland, from two individuals not even related to each other. How about that? Seattle, Washington, Salt Lake City, Utah, Dallas, Texas. Guy in Dallas, we love this guy. Donates. He's been donating for years. Nashville, Tennessee, Pickens, South Carolina, Montgomery, Alabama, Rockville, Maryland. Actually got a donation from a Confederate general in Kennesaw, Georgia. Can you believe it? On his check, he said general, and then his name, retired CSA. On his check, anything like that. So thank you, General. Jonesboro, Arkansas, the most generous man I've ever met. He and a guy in Canada. We got a guy in Canada, guy in Australia, donates every quarter, guy in Canada every month. Our listener in Jonesboro, just incredibly generous. New Brunswick, Canada. DeKalb, Illinois, Franklin, Tennessee, San Diego, California. We didn't get to all the cities, but that's a sampling of where some of our support has come in recent days. But I have to tell you, there has been a lull. The last three or four days, there's been a lull in the in the flow of support. And we have right now, as we said, exactly 1 week remaining in a critical fundraising drive. They're all critical. Each quarter is critical. And we need your support to stay on the air. Now, as you know, most of our donations are about $20, $25 or less, and they all add up. So don't think any donation is too small. It's not. We get donations for $3, $5. Of course, if you donate, though, $100 or more, we're going to give you a copy of Andrew Fraser's new book, Dissident Dispatches, The Alt-Right Guide to Christian Theology. So that's coming your way for a donation of $100 or more, but you got to make it between now and the end of the month. Only 7 days remaining. Why don't you make it tonight? Go ahead and make it easy on all of us. We'd appreciate it. We thank everybody who's donated so far this fall. We know who you are. You know we love you, and for those who still will, but there's no time like the present. Tomorrow's not guaranteed to any of us, and certainly the future for a show that is 100% listener supported is not guaranteed without that support. And I think we'll be there, but we still got a little way to go. So donate tonight. Certainly donate before the end of the month if you've not yet done so. And we're going to continue to give you the kind of content and production that you've come to know and love over the course of the last 13 years. And I'll tell you, you've got to donate to the voices that you have out there. There are not many voices that you have capable of doing the things that we've done, certainly in the mainstream media. But there are a lot of voices, including from our churches, that are working against you. Those voices are legion. The voices of the righteous are few. We're one of them. That's why we're asking for your support. We talked about the churches last week, Keith, for an hour. You want to circle back to it in the remaining minutes you have tonight. Take it away.
Well, basically what I wanted to circle around to is, what do you do about so-called white leaders that sell out the interests of white Gentiles? And here's what you've got to do. You've got to name them and shame them. You've got to be opposed to them. You've got to vote against them if they're in elected office. You vote with your feet if you attend a church that they go to or that they lead. So let's start naming and shaming. For example, in the battle over Confederate monuments in the state of Tennessee, a group of 150 pastors, at least half of which were black, and they're voting for their own interests, okay? They're doing what you're supposed to do, voting for the interests of your people.
And we covered this last week.
Then, if you attend Independent Presbyterian, if you live in Memphis, in the Memphis area, and you attend Independent Presbyterian Church, Second Presbyterian Church, Bellevue Baptist Church, the largest Baptist church in the world, St. Mary's Cathedral, if you're an Episcopalian, you need to register your complaint and back it up with withholding money. Like I've always said, the only sound a liberal fears is the click of a closing purse. Now, in the state of Tennessee, Bill Haslam, the governor of the state of Tennessee, the mayor of Memphis, Jim Strickland, all of the members of the city council that voted to take down the Confederate monuments, be sure that you vote against them. Make sure that you have some candidate who takes a 180-degree position away from what those people do is running, and do your best to coalesce support behind their political enemies. This goes, you know, nationwide and worldwide. If there is someone who is selling out the interests of white people, who is a white Gentile politician, you need to name them, shame them, and take action against them. And the action we're talking about is legal action, like voting against them, or disassociating yourself from their church, or going to the church but not giving them money. Give your money to people that will support you and who have your best interests at heart. Nobody, you know, if you are going to a church and asking for a loaf and they give you a stone, you're asking for a fish and they're giving you a serpent, you don't have any obligation to ties to that church or to give money to them. It would be good if you could find a church that really supported you and you could enthusiastically give money to them because they have your best interest at heart. But remember that a pastor is a shepherd, and a shepherd is to look after his flock. You're part of his flock. If that shepherd, that pastor, covets a flock that God hasn't given him, he wants a flock of black sheep rather than a flock of white sheep, well, then let him go to the black sheep and ask them for their tithes and offerings. You're not going to give money to somebody who is giving you a rock when you ask for a loaf, or giving you a serpent when you ask for a fish. Likewise, politically, don't support somebody who's going to sell you in the interests of your ancestors down the toilet. The New York Times had an article in Friday's paper, September the 21st, as you know, that's Thursdays, that now they're not satisfied with taking down Confederate monuments. They want to dig up Confederate graves and cemeteries up north. Well, people that would desecrate graves are the lowest form of human life, folks. This shows you where these people are coming from, and it's basically not against the Confederacy, not against slavery. They're doing it to Christopher Columbus. In Minnesota, they defaced a statue of Leif Erikson. It's anti-white. Wake up,
one
smell
of
the coffee.
One of the friars in a statue to one of the friars who settled in California.
Junipero Serra. They beheaded his
beheaded his statue.
Can you believe this? I mean, these people, if you're going to put up with this type of, basically,
savagery.
What the left is doing is showing, is telling you, you people are absolutely feckless and helpless. No one will come to your aid. We can destroy your culture and your heroes, and there's no price to be paid for it.
Keith Alexander the Great, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody does it like Keith. That's why he is on this show and why he's such a valued member of our team. And, Keith, thank you for your service tonight, brother. We'll be back with you next week. But for everyone else, stay tuned. The trio tonight, Sean Berg and Jim Lancia, Sam Dixon, still forthcoming. A lot more to come tonight on TPC, and I'll be here with you.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With Liberty News this hour, I'm Dennis Daly. People are still tearing through the words that President Trump said at the United Nations, not to tear them up, but to figure out just what the different messages were. During his address at the UN, the president talked about the destruction of Venezuela. President Trump pointed out that the Venezuelans' problem is not poor implementation of socialism, but the successful implementation. He said the problem in Venezuela is not that socialism hasn't been poorly implemented, but that it has been faithfully implemented. During his address at the UN, the president took on Cuba, and people are still talking about that. He promised, quote, "We will not lift sanctions on the Cuban government until it makes fundamental reforms." The president called Cuba corrupt, went on to support the Cuban people's dream of freedom. In June, the president revised the U.S.-Cuban policy, implementing new sanctions that he said eliminated travel for single individuals, banning future U.S. business transactions with Cuba's military. The goal of the new sanctions is to stop the flow of cash to that island. You're listening to LibertyNewsDaily.com.
The county sheriff is the first line of defense in preserving the constitutional rights of all citizens. To help your sheriff keep his oath of office, join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. Complete, accurate information has always been hard to find. For news the networks refuse to use anytime, anywhere, click to LibertyNewsDaily.com or sign up to get Liberty News delivered directly to your email, LibertyNewsDaily.com.
With Liberty News, I'm Dennis Daly.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Oh yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, we are holding on for Sean Bergen to call in. While we're waiting on Sean, I'm going to let Keith go ahead and take the lead on this one very quickly. Pat Buchanan wrote a column that addressed the situation in St. Louis, and of course by now much more information has come out than we had available to us last week. Keith, what can you tell us about the situation there, what spawned, and it doesn't take much to spawn criminality from the denizens of the Undertow.
Well,
what was it this time?
Well, it's significant because it involves a significant ramping up of their war against white people. What they're doing basically is they're taking it not just to the streets but to the suburbs. They're moving out into white neighborhoods, attacking stores, attacking malls, and attacking white people out there in what they consider to be their safe ground. They're not limiting themselves to their own neighborhoods now with the guidance from Black Lives Matter and Antifa. They're going out into the suburbs now. That's what happened. They're up here busting out windows at the mayor's home, the mayor of St. Louis. They've gone out into the suburbs, and they've been breaking windows and running amok in shopping malls. This is an escalation of the race war, and this is not being reported, and it's certainly not being, called out by the mainstream media. The mainstream media the silence is deafening about this ramping up. But this is what Black Lives Matter and Antifa and the radical left is doing now. You know, perfect example of that old Trotsky saying that you may not be interested in the revolution, but the revolution is interested in you. Coming to a theater or near you soon, a street theater near you soon, the left and their black shock troops are coming out there to wreak havoc in your neighborhood, folks.
Okay, Sean has been in touch with our producer, so he's going to be here in just a second. Ran into a little bit of a obstacle, but he is en route. I understand, Keith, that what sparked this latest situation, you can call it unrest, I guess, if you want to be somewhat polite, dealt with an issue from 2011. So it took them 6 years to figure out they were offended by this.
Well, what it was a prosecution of a former white police officer, and he was just discharging his duty as a police officer. And a jury of his peers found him to be not guilty of any wrongdoing. Now, all of the anti-white and pro-black power and pressure that the left could bring to bear on the court system was at play in this trial, and the jury manned up and decided the case according to the facts and found him not guilty. Well, blacks have somehow learned through the weakness of our leaders that they can politicize everything. They can politicize job employment decisions. They can affect and change the way that the justice system works. They can basically demand that somebody who is innocent be found guilty and then throw a tantrum if the jury and the court system doesn't oblige them. They did things like on the O.J. Simpson trial. They put pressure on a cuck named Gil Garcetti, whose son is now the mayor of Los Angeles. Gil Garcetti was the attorney general. And he allowed the trial of O.J. Simpson to be moved from the site of the crime into inner city Los Angeles, where it was a foregone conclusion that a black jury was going to let the black defendant O.J. Simpson off. And then Gil Garcetti washed his hands like Pontius Pilate of the entire trial, turned it over to a bunch of neophytes, and they predictably lost the case. And it was everybody acted like Johnny Cochran and Robert Kardashian, the patriarch of the Kardashian clan, who were the primary defense lawyers, could walk on water, when it was a foregone conclusion because of the weakness and the betrayal of the jury system by white people in charge.
You know, talking about Sean Bergen as we wait for him, Sean's bread and butter is, of course, talking about these issues. And he typically comes on the show to offer his commentary with regards to matters of Black Lives Matter, violence, or terrorism in Europe, or even here in the United States. And we were having him on so often in the last year and a half of the Obama administration. It seemed like every week there was just another manifestation of this lawlessness in the streets, the terrorism in Europe, or a combination thereof. Now, we thought once Trump was elected that this would be curtailed a little bit. But now that they've seen that Trump is mostly a paper tiger, it's starting to ratchet back up. And I don't know. I mean, how did the police handle it any differently in St. Louis last week, Keith, under the Trump administration, than they did under Obama? Now, I know Trump doesn't Trump doesn't call the shots in the city of St. Louis. We're all for states' rights, but you see my
point.
Well,
there were arrests that were made, as Sam has pointed out. But you have to understand that this is being done for, among other reasons, to put an anti-Trump face on things. This is a defiance of, they feel like Trump is pro-white, and therefore being pro-black and anti-white is somehow damaging to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a law and order candidate. He decries violence, and he decries this this kind of activism that is represented by the Black Lives Matter movement. And because of that, this is like a lightning rod. It's like a galvanizing process by the left to basically shoot the bird in the face of Donald Trump and people that support Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is, when all is said and done, more will be said than done. I would love to see the police really come down hard on these protesters the way that they came down on the so-called white supremacists at Charlottesville. If they basically would allow either...
Yeah, they're not there, even their, not only their civil rights, but their most basic First Amendment rights. So, yeah, where's that when it comes to the other side?
And the police did nothing, and they allowed the leftists to run amok and basically crackheads throw bricks and terrorize the people that were legally there on a court-ordered demonstration.
The court order was only reinforcing the permit that the city of Charlottesville granted them weeks in advance. And, of course, we've covered that to exhaustion, but it still should bear repeating.
And instead, the police forces always treat these Black Lives Matter protesters with kid gloves.
And they never have. Do you think they have a permit to a permit to shut down streets and shut down the I-40 bridge?
There's no suggestion that they even should. You know, that's never even broached by the mainstream media.
So not only do they not even have a permit, and a permit isn't good it's not even worth the paper it's printed on, because as we've seen, a permit means nothing. A judge's court order means nothing if it's not enforcing the so-called rights of the in crowd. But yes, indeed. So these people can go and shut down Charlottesville. They can shut down Baltimore. They can shut down any number of cities, as we have seen time and time and time again. And never even gets brought up. But on the other hand,
that's why we need a Trump news network. Yeah. Well, the thing is, if it happens in a white city and the rights of white right-wingers are protected, it's just a non-story. It goes into the Orwellian memory hole and is never reported on. On the other hand, if there's some way they can spin it in a way that is pro-liberal and pro-leftist, they will cover it morning, noon, and night for a month, the way they did Charlottesville. They're still not through chewing on the bloody bone of Charlottesville.
Oh, no. I mean, there's going to be stuff. The fallout from that is going to continue for months, if not years.
They're like a bulldog with a bloody bone when it comes to that.
It'll be the Birmingham church bombing before history's done with its treatment on that.
The four most important deaths that ever happened in the history of the world is the four that died at the Birmingham church bombing. And now
you can
add Heather Heyer
to that list.
They've beheaded the statue of Father Junipero Serra out in California. They're going to replace it with a statue, I suppose, of the idealized version of Heather Heyer out there. not the real one. They'd have to, get a beach
whale. I know where you're going with that. All right. Anyway, I think we've done a serviceable job in setting the table on what has happened in St. Louis. I appreciate you putting in the overtime. I think we've got Sean Bergen lined up for the next segment, so we're going to let him do it in his most professional way. Nobody can set the stage for a story like former television newsman Sean Bergen. We're going to get him on the horn for you right after this. Stay tuned, everybody. Thank you, Keith.
You're welcome.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, without further ado, we've got the great Sean Bergen. You know Sean, no need for an introduction. Sean, take it away from the very top. Let's talk St. Louis. Let's talk Jason Stockley and the verdict and everything that happened afterwards. You take it any way you want to go. It's all yours.
Well, you know, look, I mean, here's the thing. We've seen this movie before, and we can write the script now. A black cop shoots young black man. And for those who support this guy, Anthony Lamar Smith, this 24-year-old African-American man, look, this is an old case. This was goes back to 2011. Police officer Jason Stockley and his partner witnessed this guy who was a 24-year-old convicted drug dealer, Anthony Lamar Smith, who was out on parole for, surprise, surprise, guns and weapons, weapons and drug charges. So these two officers witnessed this guy engaged in what looked like a drugs transaction, a handoff outside of Church's Fried Chicken in St. Louis, and the guy flees the scene, so they engage in a high-speed chase. And this is after the guy ran the cop car twice on his way out. And, Stockley and his partner ended up running into the back end of this guy. High-speed chase at speeds of approaching 90 miles an hour, putting everybody at risk. They get this guy, and Stockley was on videotape in the cop car saying, I'm going to kill this mother effer when I, don't you know it. Probably same thing anybody would say under those circumstances, just expressing some rage. But what happened was after this guy, Lamar Smith, crashed his car and the cop car ran into the back of him, Stockley got out and ended up shooting this guy four or five times when he saw him go for a weapon. Now, defenders of Lamar Smith will say that the gun was planted. Well, he had a bag of dope in the car, that heroin in the car, so that and that had his DNA all over it. But the weapon, for some reason, wasn't. And Stockley decided that he would waive his right to a jury trial and just go before a judge. And the evidence that was presented was that, this police officer probably thought his life was at risk by the behavior that was exhibited by this convicted drug dealer who definitely did not want to go back to jail. I knew he's probably looking at a very lengthy prison sentence if he went back on more drug and gun charges. Now, for the people who want to defend Smith and say that gun was planted, because here's the thing, it didn't have Jason Stockley's DNA on it. That's the critical piece of evidence, was that the revolver that was found, and it was a big gun. It's not something like a little Derringer you could just palm in your hand or smuggle in your pocket. Everything about that incident was on videotape, and there was no opportunity for Stockley to be, secreting a revolver at that site in any part of his, uniform. He didn't have a jacket on, and the judge noted that. So he acquitted the cop and saying that his story is, likely true because, the judge said in his 28 years on the bench, he had never seen a self-respecting heroin dealer who was without a gun. That for a heroin Absolutely. Dealer to be without a gun would be an anomaly. And so for that reason, he found it very likely that this heroin dealer was armed, that he saw the gun, and that he went for the gun, and the cop shot him. So, of course, here we have a cop who 5 years, 6 years after the fact was acquitted. And our media will paint it, of course, as white cop, black guy. Don't say he was a criminal or a drug dealer or that he fled police or he led cops on a high speed. They leave all that out and they just make it white cop, black victim in this case. And after the cop is acquitted, of course, it's just an excuse for the professional protesters to come out and do what they do best, which is, burn, loot, destroy property, assault police officers. And these protests now have stretched into a sixth day. I was just reading today where there was more
incredible.
Arrest, at a Galleria Mall. These people have nothing else going on in their lives, obviously. They're professional protesters. They're Antifa. It's an outgrowth of, everybody's invited to these things. There's no qualifying standard for anybody who wants to show up and create mayhem. You could be with Black Lives Matter. You could be with Antifa. You could be just some, jackass anarchist or some, runaway member of the Occupy movement. But it's the same exact scenario that we saw playing out in Ferguson just 3 years ago. Nothing has changed. In fact, it's only gotten worse. And the same scene that we saw play out in Baltimore, where you've got a young black male who is a criminal, either resisting arrest or attacking police or leading them on a high-speed chase. And then, of course, the liberal politicians in these cities want to want to canonize the guy and turn him into some type of saint afterwards. They're handing out proclamations and building memorials to these guys who are just criminals and thugs. And if they're not getting into it with the cops, then they're terrorizing members of their own community. You know,
that's
I
right.
mean, bringing heroin into your community and selling heroin is a pretty serious offense. You know, you destroy lives with that stuff. But
the American
no doesn't see that.
Well, and Sean, I mean, the number of cities now that are on this list that you mentioned that have been terrorized by Black Lives Matter and Antifa are legion.
Yeah.
And you named a few of them, and there's quite a few more. So you expertly broke down what happened in the case of Officer Stockley and the so-called victim. But let's talk about what happened after that. Now, you hinted on it, but you had on Friday night, that was a week ago Friday, 33 rioters were arrested, 10 police officers were injured. After Black Lives Matter and Antifa tore a path of destruction through the central west end of St. Louis and were even bold enough to attack the mayor's house. Then the following night, 19 were arrested after vandalizing 23 businesses. Then on Sunday night, that's the third consecutive night, over 80 rioters were arrested after rioting and destroying property in downtown St. Louis. Now, each night, the Black Lives Matter thugs and the Antifa anarchists have spent hours rioting and attacking the St. Louis police after other demonstrators have gone home. And each night they have also gone to a different part of St. Louis in order to engage in vandalism against businesses. So clearly, Sean, these two domestic terrorist groups, which are at the center of all the mayhem in the United States right now, are doing this because their agenda is to make business owners pay an economic price for the Jason Stockley verdict, as if it was, you know, the Save-A-Lot manager's issue, but by rioting and attacking police officers, the mob is asserting its sovereignty over St. Louis. So I would ask you this. Has Trump handled it any better or worse than what we would have seen out of the Obama administration? I think you've certainly seen maybe a few more arrests, but overall, we thought that this would be, you know, any manifestation of this sort of lawlessness would be quelled very quickly and assuredly under a Trump administration. But you're talking about now a week strong. This thing is still ongoing. And you could say, well, it's a St. Louis issue. It's a Missouri issue. That's true, but the buck stops somewhere. The president could stop this if he wanted to.
Well, you might be right. You know, he could call in the National Guard. They probably didn't see this stretching out as long as it did. You know, so, I mean, what's entering into the president's calculus at this point is they're probably just – it's probably not something they want to wade into the middle of. Now, at the same time, you know, what's different between here, this President Obama? Well, the major difference is that he's not inviting members of Black Lives Matter to the White House, you know, for coffee and crumpets.
Touché.
So that's a major difference, and I'm sure he'll speak out against it. And he, you know, he took a very strong stand against these football players who want to take the knee and turn November into, you know, some type of demonstrating against police month or whatever, or social injustice or whatever it is they're you know, crybabying about now. They're just killing themselves. They're like Hollywood stars. The other thing that I wanted to – you touched on this for a second was the fact that, you know, St. Louis right now is – in the process of trying to court Amazon to bring their second headquarters to St. Louis. This would be like a $5 billion operation that would bring 50,000 jobs to St. Louis. And there's a lot of economic experts looking at this and saying this type of civil unrest is exactly what a company like Amazon would not want to put their business roots down in. You know what I mean? Like, they would not want to make that $5 billion investment into a city that looks like, you know, maybe it's headed in the direction of Detroit. And so this has ends up hurting the very people who live in St. Louis. And a lot of these demonstrators and protesters are from outside St. Louis. But, you know, it's like they just can't think it through, you know. And even if they could, they're so self-possessed and self-absorbed that to think that with their cause or whatever they're doing is the most important thing happening in St. Louis right now. So,
well, Sean, listen, I want to thank you. I regret we had a little difficulty getting you on at the bottom of the hour. I want to thank you for breaking this down so succinctly and expertly, as you always do. I know we got to get to Jim Lancey at the top of the next hour, but we'll have you back on for more extended play the next time BLM acts up, which, like the Annie song, it's only a day away. But I want to thank you tonight for for your efforts and contribution to the show. You really put a capstone on this the way no one else could. A final word to you before the music starts.
Well, you know, just this, you know, this whole leftist anti-cop thing is just, you know, it permeates everything. And it is always coming from the left. That's the important thing is that, you know, this is liberalism. This is the new leftism, the modern liberalism, progressivism, whatever it is these folks are calling themselves. And, you know, they think that they and their cause are at the center of the universe right now. And maybe, you know, in the next hour, you can talk to Jim Lency a little bit about this guy, Michael Isaacson, who was the professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, who was sending out tweets, you know, saying, you know, that he's hoping or, you know, considers it a privilege that he can teach future dead cops. I mean, it's just so perverse and so sick. I don't know where our culture has gone or why some people think that this is acceptable on any level, but there's got to be a few of us out there who have the courage to stand up and say, no, it's not, you know, and we got something to say about it. And we know you don't, you know, we know that there's people out there who don't like it, but too bad. We're going to talk anyway.
Well, that's right. And again, Sean, thanks for being one of the good guys. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for always being there for us and being on call when these situations come up, because we really love the way you tell the story and paint the verbal picture. You're a pro's pro, brother, and we'll talk to you again soon. Everybody else, stay tuned for Jim Lancia.
There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.